Well, my special guest in the studio is a singer and songwriter who's recently returned from a New York City recording session. Vibrant, fresh, and new on the Sydney scene, she's quickly making her mark around town, already having performed with some of Sydney's most talented musicians, such as James Muller, Phil Stack, Tim Firth, Brendan Clarke, Bill Risby, Gerard Masters, and many, many more. She'll be one of the featured performers at this year's Jazz Groove Summer Festival this coming Saturday night at the Macquarie Hotel. Brianna Callishaw, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thank you for having me.
Brianna, can you mark the moment in time when you decided to seriously pursue singing as a career?
I sang jazz all throughout high school, probably starting from year 8. I joined the jazz band, but I definitely didn't even consider it as part of my career until probably the very end of year 12 when it was like uni or music. And I just, there was nothing else I wanted to do. And it was just a sudden decision that was the most important thing, really.
And you joined the jazz band at school, and my question was why jazz, but obviously you fell in love with the music.
Yeah, I mean, I was very naive at that point and just loved the simple things about it. But I was in the school band anyway for clarinet, and the thought of just being able to sing in a band and not have to play the clarinet was very appealing to me at that time. So that was a big decision breaker for me.
You've just recorded your debut CD, documenting your own original music
Yes.
as well with leading jazz artists. And those artists have visited Australia before, the pianist Aaron Goldberg, the drummer Gregory Hutchinson, the bass player Reuben Rogers, and also a couple of others, Mike Marino, the guitarist, and Ambrose Akinmusire on the trumpet, who was out here for the Wangaratta Festival, I think a couple of years ago. Clearly intent on making your mark in the jazz genre. After you moved into jazz, were you ever turning back? When I say turning back, did you ever decide think, well, maybe jazz isn't for me, or is jazz, you're on the road now and there's no turning back?
Yeah, well, definitely. I was about to say it's quite the opposite. I didn't mean to fall so heavily into the jazz category, but I went to the Australian Institute of Music, and that's definitely not a jazz heavy environment.
No.
And I worked with a lot with Greg and Sean Coffin, and that, especially Sean, I had improvisation lessons with him, and I think I just started to fall in love with jazz harmony and how it challenged me, especially compositionally. And I just found it fascinating that I knew nothing about it at first. To my ears, there's so many avenues you can explore in jazz harmony, and there's many avenues you can explore in rock and in pop. But yeah, my passion definitely just keeps growing and growing more intensely towards the jazz avenue.
And of course, you have diverse that you have interest in Latin music and also
Yeah,
in funk, and they're
big
the sorts
Latin
of things you
lover.
really have to do, I guess, in Sydney, isn't it? In Australia,
Yeah,
really.
well, definitely in terms of earning a living here, there's just the jazz audience is very tiny. Not tiny, but small, and it doesn't cater financially, you would say. So you have to be versatile
Yes.
in terms of all genres. And I mean, even though my passion lies in jazz, even though my passion isn't as heavy doing different gigs, I still learn a lot from doing them, mainly because they challenge me because I'm not as passionate. So I have to find a way of accommodating a different challenge, but it only makes me feel more equipped.
Now, you highlight Joni Mitchell, Carmen McRae, Antonio Carlos Jobim as inspirations, along with Miles Davis's linear approach. Now, can you elaborate on the idea of Miles Davis's linear approach?
Good question. In terms of, I'd say, not so much soloing in a bebop way, the way he kind of uses guitar tones and leads through solos in a more linear fashion, I am able to relate easier to that.
Okay.
Especially earlier on, I was able to relate easier to that, seeing as I wasn't developed enough harmonically to understand the bebop language. So that was I related to that linear approach and just loved the use of his sound. So that affected me at first.
So I guess for the layman, his cool modal
Yeah,
style
definitely.
of playing in the late 1950s and into the early 60s.
Yeah,
Okay. Yep,
definitely.
that makes sense. Joni Mitchell, obviously, a lover of her writing.
A lover of her everything.
Yeah.
Definitely. The thing that I listen to her night and day, but the thing that really gets me about Joni Mitchell is just her ability to tell a story, which I'm appreciating more and more as I get through my career. But just her lyrics are very, sometimes very exposing and real, and I find that very refreshing and beautiful. To
Yes.
be able to see someone else experience something, whether it's pain or love, or she's kind of wears her heart on her sleeve, which I love.
You were successful in making it down to the final six finalists, I think, in the James Morrison Generations in Jazz Vocal Scholarship a couple of years back. And of course, during last year, your name started popping up with some serious jazz artists here in Sydney, which we named at the top of the show. How important is that kind of recognition, do you think, in Australia today?
I mean, the biggest thing for me about that competition was just a great learning experience. And you, meeting a lot of people like Phil Stack was in the band, and meeting Emma Pask down there, and James Muller went down there as well. And those type of competitions are actually, they're quite difficult and separated from a real performing environment, you would say. It's very different to a normal gig. It's not, you're not in your comfort zone. You don't have more than 5 seconds to feel comfortable before you have to peak at a performance, which is, I guess, pretty unrealistic. But yeah, just it was a, it's a great learning experience, and although it was very scary at the time, it's great for meeting people and meeting James Morrison, and I think it all helps along the way, definitely.
When fiction comes to life. Tell me about the inspiration for this one.
This tune is about a girl walking into a bookstore and opening a book and going on a journey. And for me, it's kind of, I wrote it just before I went traveling to Europe and to New York recently. And it was me basically wanting to be overseas and traveling the world before I left. So, yeah, it's about reading about other people's journeys and then trying to embark on your own.
Have you got a title for the album yet, Brianna?
Not as of yet. I'll pretend that it's a secret, but really I'm not quite sure yet.
What's the most important elements for you when you're interpreting a song?
I would definitely say finding a way to relate to it myself, whether it's relating it back to me, or whether it's relating it to someone I know, or understanding someone else's situation. Any way I can relate to a song, I'm going to be able to interpret it more appropriately and more honestly, I think, in terms of communicating that to an audience, because how can you communicate to an audience if you don't know yourself?
So does that take, for example, a lot of reflection from yourself before,
Definitely. Yeah. Well, for me anyway, I mean, some people find some things more natural, but I definitely have to, like, I often sit down and write out the lyrics to a song, and maybe read them out loud just so that I can hear it back myself the way someone would say it to me. Yeah, and it kind of takes, even if it's a standard, which I want to do differently or phrase differently, it always comes back to the way I'm interpreting it lyrically. So instead of singing the phrasing as I always do, I'll speak the lyrics or something and, yeah, find a different understanding or a different way to look at it so that I can interpret it and then project it a different way.
And when you're choosing a standard, how do you go about that? Is it something that the lyrics appeal to you firstly, or the melody, or again, do you feel as though you need to have a special relationship with the lyric?
I mean, it depends. If you're just picking standards, I mean, I'll learn any standard, but if I want to do a standard within my original set, or for example, picking the standards that I did on my album, that there's more depth to those decisions than there is, for example, doing a four sets of standards. Definitely, if I'm picking standards that I want to, I actually had trouble with this because Greg and Ruben and Aaron, I wasn't going to do any standards on my album, and they all said that they thought it was a really good idea in terms of reaching an audience that already understand that language. So I, the night before the album, I went home and had to decide and come up with two arrangements, which was quite stressful, you would say. The night before my first album, it took me by surprise, but yeah, I came back to that whole what is important to me and what do I love to do and what do I want to communicate? And Skylark is a beautiful tune. I've always connected with the lyrics. And Triste was the other one that I put on the album because I have a huge connection to Jobim and his phrasing and the lyrics to that too. So.
Writing lyrics, does the lyric come first, the melody, or does it go hand in hand, or how does it actually happen
It
for you?
comes every way that you can imagine and different every time. It really depends. I mean, I usually find, annoyingly enough, the best songs I ever write are when it all happens in one go, because then it's very it's a unit. The everything's complementing, the lyrics are complementing the harmony, which is complementing the rhythm that it goes with. But being able to find that and have that process happen is for me quite rare.
And
So
do they come out at the most inopportune time?
oh, totally. The
Find
most
yourself running to
annoying
the
and
piano.
inappropriate times when you don't have a pen, when you don't have a paper, when you don't have a piano, all the time. But yeah, I mean, it's different. It's fun in a way as well that it happens different every time, because sometimes I'll just have written out lyrics or, a piece of writing, and I want to make that into something. So it's then, what do I do with this? I don't know what melody I hear under it yet, or do you come up with harmony first? Or yeah, so just sitting down at my piano and seeing what comes out is usually the only way I can do it, and it happens different every time.
I know songwriters, some songwriters who work and rework the bones of their material over quite some period of time, even some in some cases years. So do you find that you need to do that, or when it comes out you're quite happy with it?
I work actually a lot off other people's feedback in terms of, I mean, the thing that I usually have the most trouble with is coming up with the most appropriate arrangement, because I'll have a melody I'm happy with, I'll have, a formula I'm happy with, but in terms of, yeah, the arrangement of whether to do a solo or go back to the verse or go back to the chorus, that sometimes stumps me. So I often ask when I get to rehearsal before a gig, or if I'm approaching someone, I say, what if this was your song, what would you prefer to solo over? Like, which section would you like to solo over, and where do you hear this going? And I love to get feedback from other people and then kind of absorb that, and then from there go back and reassess. Because there's only so much you can reassess it yourself a million times, but you're not changing every day. Oh, so you're often going to come back to square one unless you get outside information.
And I guess your own material is probably more preconceived in that fashion than, say, for example, a standard that you might allow musicians to sort of more be a bit more flexible with.
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely before an originals gig, we'll know exactly what form we will solo over, for example. Whereas in a standard, you have no idea until it happens and when it ends. But I wouldn't say it's preconceived, especially because when I go to rehearsal, we do change, and from gig to gig, we do change depending on who's on the gig or who's soloing on which tune. Some people, for example, the piano player or the guitar player, might like to solo over different sections, and I'm very open to that because that's only going to help with them enjoying and them playing better.
Yes, and I guess this is from the aspect of you being quite young. And I wanted to know how you thought jazz was perceived generally by your generation.
How it's perceived. A lot of people, well, a lot of my friends, I know they feel very disconnected from it just because we've grown up in a generation that's very far away from where it all began. And so, unless you do delve into it yourself, the information is not really readily available to you. So, not knowing about something is always going to make you feel detached from it. So definitely I out of all my school friends, and I mean I went to a music college, so all my music friends are interested, but yeah, I'd say we definitely feel disconnected.
So it's something you've really got to seek out. But then there has to be some sort of spark there, hasn't it? And what generally it might come down to learning music in the school band to generate that
Maybe.
spark,
Well, I definitely didn't get my
can't
jazz inspiration from the clarinet, but yeah, I think unless you do make an effort yourself to explore,
Yes.
then you are quite many miles away from it.
Despite the prevalence of female jazz singers, jazz on the whole, Brianna in my opinion, is a very masculine art form, still very much dominated by males, and this seems to be changing, but albeit very slowly. How do you feel about that? And do you ever encounter anything but equality on the bandstand?
I definitely agree with you, in terms of it being a male-dominated industry, but I definitely get along well with males, sometimes better than females. So I don't really ever have a problem, and I don't ever feel out of place. I think as long as you're working with people who you respect and who respect you, then you're all going to be equals on the bandstand because it's only about the music when you start performing. So, but definitely, I feel like one of a small group of females who are on the scene.
Where would you like to take all this? Do you have any medium-term goals for your career?
I definitely want to explore New York further. I was there for 3 months, which to some people might seem like a long time, but to me, definitely went way too quickly. And I think that environment is going to be where I most improve and feel like I did improve just the short time I was there. So after I come up with a plan for the album and do something with that, I'm hoping to move back there and explore the scene and just learn there for, probably be learning for a lifetime. But
It's
yeah.
the type of environment that allows you to specialize too, doesn't it? As far as being able to always have an audience for the type of music that you actually want to perform.
Yeah, I mean,
It's not like Australia where you do have to diversify and be versatile to actually make that living.
New York's a very different story. There's 10 times as many gigs and a billion times as many musicians and a quarter of the amount of pay. So you can have, triple the gigs that I'll have 2 gigs here and I'll get paid more for that than someone who's working 5 nights a week in New York because it's working off tips or a very small fee, sorry. So, yeah, I wouldn't say that they make more of a living. The people I noticed that did make more of a living were the musicians that worked on tours through Europe throughout the summer. So, I mean, it's all a learning experience, but they're very different scenes in terms of making a living.
Brianna, thanks very much for joining us on the program tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.